Welcome everyone to the Ethereum 2.0 client panel discussion. The idea with this is to, well, after this morning's presentations where we saw lots of the work that's been done and been given insight into to some of the solutions that have come up with, to explore more how we move on from here, in particular, how do we do that together. There's a lot of togetherness, I think, in general in Ethereum 2.0. There's many of the design aspects have been centered around trying to coordinate people, be that through the use of technologies that other people are using, WASM, libP2P, BLS standardization, etc., to the multi-cliented approach we're taking. I think that's a powerful thing, as we've seen. And so I think a good place to start off with is something we had quite recently, which was the interop event. This was a great opportunity where we locked a bunch of people in a room to see what happened. And the results of this experiment was we got 7 clients speaking to each other, which is pretty freaking incredible. So now that we've achieved that, I think that's allowed us to get a lot further along this route. So I think we should have some introductions before we quickly dive into this. So if you can start down that side and have everyone just say their name, who they're working on, and what was the sort of one thing that they took from Interop, or what's the one maybe the main thing that you guys are now working on as a result of Interop.
Hey, I'm Ben. I'm just standing in for the great Joe DeLong on this panel. I kind of assembled the Artemis team a year ago. I'm better known for what's new in ETH2 these days. I was at Interop, and it was awesome. Takeaways, I think it's time to press on to production now. We've proved the concept. It works. We can interoperate. It's very cool, but now we're moving into a new phase with Artemis. And handing it over to the production team to do all the stuff like writing documentation and searching the comments for to do and all that good stuff.
Hey everyone, I'm Raul from Prismatic Labs. I was unfortunately not at Interop, but remotely helping out the teams there and figuring out kind of how to get people on board Prism. One of the biggest takeaways was getting everyone to easily run a beacon chain and a validator. We had to make it easy for everyone, and it improved a lot of our local development a lot. It made it very, very easy to launch a beacon chain with n number of deterministic validators. So that sort of standardization that came out of the effort made our lives easier, and hopefully others' lives easier. So.
Hey everyone, I'm Alex Stokes. I work on Trinity, which is the Python implementation of ETH2O. Interop was great, as we'll probably all tell you here. The biggest thing I think we probably all saw across the board was, just having like these sort of coordinated starts and like getting these test nets to actually like all go at the same time. We have a large number of clients, and so we have some extra fun just like wrangling all of these cats. There's like a bunch of little stuff that we saw sort of specific to Trinity from the interop. And the big thing that we'll probably be focusing on longer term over like the next, let's say 3 to 6 months is heavy focus on performance. Like I said, we're a Python client, so we kind of have a performance penalty we incur de facto. So we'll be doing a lot of optimization there. We are looking at dropping our like really sort of tight loops and things into Rust. So we've had some work on like Rust modules in Python, which is fun. And yeah, that's about it.
Hello everyone, my name's Paul. I work on Lighthouse. It's one of the Rust implementations. I think one of the great things that came from Interop was just a lot of scripts that we can use to build each other. So Jacek built a bunch of scripts, which was great. So now we have a bunch of tools that we can use by ourselves to test with other clients. So that really helps reduce the friction that we can before we can test our client against others. What we're working on now, after Interop, we're basically targeting feature completeness. We have an RFP for a security review out there, so we're preparing for that. And we're working on trying to take our client into the sort of the tens of thousands of validator ranges and above to make sure that we can run nice and quickly and efficiently with production level numbers of validators.
Hi, I'm Zachary from the Nimbus team. A lesson that we learned from Interop, I guess, is the importance of testing. And our success was largely due to the very well-prepared test suite, and where there was bumps along the road, this is places where the tests are kind of missing. I would repeat what Paul said, that one of the most valuable takeaways was these scripts that allow us now to run multi-client test nets. And now I think we should all keep improving on them. And regarding the future of Nimbus client, we'll be publishing very shortly our roadmap for getting Nimbus production ready. And we hope to do that in the next 6 months.
Hi, I'm Dejun from Runtime Verification. So we developed K kind of client, but we are not really just running the client, but just formally verifying the clients. So, but I hope that some crazy idea or crazy users use our K client as just adding another diversity. And yeah. But yeah, so far we just form verification purpose.
When
will
it be a PK?
Hello, my name is Mikhail. I'm from Harmony team. And the interop went very well. And I even didn't expect it. It was so productive. As a follow-ups, we are continuing to work on the fork choice tests, like a complex test. Also, we need to finish sync, and was thinking about start working on BLS stuff, finishing discovery. And the main takeaway from Interop is that we are merging efforts with Artemis, so we probably can avoid this production-ready stuff. So yeah, okay, that's it.
I'm Wei from Party. I think we didn't join the interop on site, but I was doing some similar interop stuff at home, trying to get it work, put some all nights. It mostly works. I think the most important lessons we learned is still testing. So we were one or two patch version behind, but even except that, we still have like one or two consensus bugs found during the interop that doesn't pick up the test, doesn't pick up by the test. We passed all the tests before. So I think that's the biggest lesson we learned. Testing is really important.
Also, I forgot to say that we tested GVM P2P as well as our client, and he fixed some bugs, and it's now compatible. At least the stack that used for interop is now compatible with all other implementation like JavaScript, Python, and Rust and Go.
I also just want to use this moment to toss out a PSA. We're all using the same BLS library at the moment, I believe. Yeah. So if anyone out there wants to write a BLS implementation, more implementations is better.
On the note of BLS implementations, the standardization efforts have been charging forward, and we have some more reference implementations from those efforts. So hopefully within the next 1 month or so, we should have what is the final specification for BLS, which is really a major step forward and means that basically then that's, to me, the last hurdle in terms of specification that's left. So moving on. We've had all these interop events, but we need to now start transitioning to more organic starting up of these events and allowing nodes or clients to properly sync with one another. With we previously used scripts and files to start up these test nets, but to have more It's the way we allow validators to join into your network and transitioning into proper test nets. So I'd be interested to hear comments on how we can do this and sort of what are the challenges and what are the next steps in these regards.
So I think a huge step forward from what we had at Interop would be sort of testing out our ETH1 integration. I think most of the clients have at least some form of it. But essentially, this would be like having, you know, some ETH1 testnet, ideally one that we kind of all could easily, for example, produce ETH for or spin up or spin down as we need. And then use that to kind of test, okay, like you're saying, here's a real world setting where it's like there's an ETH1 network. We then have this ETH2 deployment. How can we actually have validators join and leave, but mainly join?
I think it's time for specialization. I think we're going to see like all the clients at this point, now that we know we can talk and we know like we have a baseline, we're going to see everybody kind of splitting down, isolating, and like going down, basically challenging, you know, their languages and their respective implementations to whatever it is that like their original goal was set out to be. I think that's probably what we'll see like happen in the next 6 months.
For us as well, then the very next milestone is running test nets connected to ETH1. And for this, we've been following the lead of Prism, and we've been publishing a deposit contract on the Gorli network. And I expect that we will have some interoperability with they'll be able to use our contract, and they'll be able to use theirs, and so on. And there have been some talks in the last few days. One of the clients agreed that it would be beneficial if we set up a shared organization on GitHub where everybody has commit rights and where we can work on and improve these scripts that allow each developer to launch testnets on their own computer, on their own environment. So I see two directions. One is public-facing testnets running on ETH1, and then the ability for everyone to just make quick local setups for quick validation.
Yeah, echoing that, we really enjoy using Gorli. I think Gorli is becoming a lot more of a de facto standard as well for like ETH1 devs to test out smart contracts, and it's been really nice to try out deposits. Another big effort is the ARP, is like the API standardization effort that will come over the coming months. So there's a lot of talk about not having people use a CLI to stake, to run validators. You know, can we have a standardized API that allows people to build things, interesting things like wallet explorers, other things that allow you to interact with the chain? And that will be a really critical effort over the coming months as well. So.
On the note of sharing deposit contracts, do you think it's worth then having one centralized deposit contract on Gorli or similar?
Well, for a lot of these testnets, it makes a lot of sense to restart them frequently. Mm-hmm. And then nothing prevents you from having multiple deposit contracts being active at the same time. You know, basically, the client only needs to specify the address of the deposit contract that you'll be using.
Just in terms of the shared deposit contract, I think something that would be nice too would be a common onboarding process for validators. I think the EF was maybe considering about jumping on that. So it'd be nice if we don't all have to build, you know, a million different little validator onboarding things, then to be superseded by an official one coming out.
We also probably want to test this beacon chain start for many times because it could be a huge point of failure. I mean, that kicking off from ETH1 chain to the beacon chain. So that's probably worth to focus on as well.
Yeah, definitely. We don't want to find that out in production. On that topic, I think it'd also be worth discussing what are the what are valid criteria, or how would we decide that we are ready to do this mainnet launch? So I agree, one of them should be that we've had launches based off ETH1 and these starts. But how do we actually decide that this is the finalized version, both in terms of we can specify minimum ETH deposits and that kind of thing, but also more in terms of how what we require of clients to be able to participate in these networks, and how do we say that this client should or shouldn't participate. I mean, obviously, it's not going to be some definitive thing, but what is a good signal for deciding that a client is ready for participating in a mainnet launch?
I mean, yeah, that's obviously a big question. At a high level, right, like, I would expect we want this to be actually fairly community-driven, probably, like, highly directed by the client developers themselves. Obviously, there's things like uptime and performance and stuff, right? So, for example, if we end up with, like, a ton of early validators, we all want clients to be able to handle that many validators. I know, for example, Trinity, like, can't scale to, like, the theoretical max right now. Like, we just don't have the performance. We'll get there, but we're not there yet. So these types of things are like really important qualifications. You know, at a certain point, it's hard to say like, are you ready? You can always defer and like do more testing. So at a certain point, you just have to like, you know, I'll say, well, these are all sounding really negative. I was going to say jump off the cliff or something, but yeah, hopefully we know it when we see it and we're like, okay, we all feel good. And here we go.
Yeah, I agree that, there should be some, we should start testing with some the parameters that affect the performance of the network. We should start validating that each of the clients is ready for this. But our own roadmap is also built around the need for performing security audit on our code. And this is a pretty complicated thing to plan out because it requires you to freeze a lot of the code, so we are currently creating a plan that would allow us to create sort of a pipeline for smaller and smaller components that will go through audit and then bigger and bigger parts until we are ready to launch.
Yeah, I was going to comment along the same lines. I mean, in this network, you can't prevent anyone from saying I'm a validator and being part of the network. I mean, that's the whole point. So it requires client teams need to take responsibility on the one hand, and so I think exactly right, audits are going to be important. One of the very striking differences between Ethereum 2 and Ethereum 1 is that in ETH 2 we need to do online signing. You have to have your key available to sign in real time, which is something that all the ETH1 clients and nodes have moved away from over the years because it's really hard to do it securely. So that's going to be a critical point where we need to focus audit and security effort on that. And on the other hand, users need to be kind of wise as well because they have to choose a client in which to run and to stake and so forth. And I think the best thing we can do there is probably to have some joint benchmark suite or, you know, it's all about information, right, and making it consistent and so people can compare and contrast and, you know, understand which is the client that meets their needs. But yeah, I'd definitely like to see a diversity. I think it would be a shame if the network were dominated by one client. More than 50% on one client would be a pity.
I guess another point of importance is formally verify the safety and liveness of the beacon chain. I mean, as you all know, that in the paper-wise, the paper that proved these two properties on that the abstract model of the beacon chain, but reality is the implementation has quite a lot of the optimization and also slightly different definalization rules. So just make sure that those differences doesn't actually break the safety and liveness. So yeah, that's our actually goal in our end. We wanted to finish the form verification before others are actually ready to release. So I'll have to stop.
Yeah, and the safety of all our clients relies on this assumption that someone's going to slash bad people. I don't know anyone that's got a slasher working that can efficiently run, that can efficiently cover the distance that we need. And it's still in research as to, you know, how can we store all of the previous votes and efficiently search them. So we're definitely going to need slashers out there And I think they're going to have some degree of review and guarantee that, you know, they're watching and they'll get you.
Adding on to that quickly, we also need like slashing protection, right? So like in terms of like infrastructure providers or people that are, they just don't want some sort of crazy situation with their infra to cause them to double propose or double sign. So that's also something that needs to be built in and users will be asking for that.
I totally agree with everything that's been said and want just to add that we might probably need some more QA stuff like fuzzing. We want to do cross-client fuzzing to find tricky consensus breaks that could not be probably found during a testnet runs. And also we need to expose a basic interface to chain data to build even primitive block explorers around that and to get some network monitors to understand what is going on. So, yeah, that's my points.
Another fun thing leading up to production would be incentivized testnets. So in the Cosmos community, they've done some of this with Game of Stakes. It'd be fun if we do the same thing, get together a prize pool. And the idea is we have a testnet, public testnet, anyone can come and go, and then try to keep the testnet alive. the other thing would be like actually talking to validators or potential validators and like getting their input sort of in like a product feedback type setting. I think we were all very focused on like the spec and like the engineering and like making really nice, sexy clients. But definitely it's like for phase zero, who are the users of these things? Well, validators. So talking to operators of validation pools and just not necessarily just pools, but validators in general. And seeing how that process unfolds.
Sorry, one more. I think we need some interest from external, I guess non-client developer team UI people. So I think a lot of the client developers were systems programmers, and the idea of choosing a color makes us sweat. So it'd be great to have, and we don't I think at the moment have maybe a few people that are like, you know, front end devs that are interested in building UIs for this, and it'd be great to have these things as a common good that lives outside of the client teams that gets the love that they deserve.
And on top of that, I think it's very important for the general validator experiences to not only just help them with the general running of the clients, but what happens when validators get slashed? How do we notify them of this? Or when there's major chain consensus, how do you, if your client's not updating or there's some fundamental issue, how do we notify clients like of these problems? And I mean, we could trivially have some central solution which sends you an email or something, but having people register their validators with such a thing is a kind of scary concept from a privacy standpoint. So how can we enable these kinds of things, which I think are also very important for the community and to help validators understand, A, what their client's doing and how they can stay on top of things. Cool. With that, I think as we're heading into the final minutes here, I'd like to open the floor to questions for anyone who'd like to talk about anything related to the immediate future of E3.0.
I'm somewhat forwarding this question from Philippe Castingay from Horizon Games and the Fairwind Ponzi scheme revelation. My name's John Marlin. I do security audits, so I'm not a dApp dev, but I know a lot about smart contracts. And his question is about like the migration process, and if there are plans for doing any migration testing for dApps moving to the ETH2 mainnet or testnet either.
Definitely. So the migration from ETH1 to ETH2 is clearly something that came up in the discussions yesterday too, and is a very important thing and clearly a pain point for the community. I think it's something everyone is nervous about. We have this great community within Ethereum 1. How can we transfer that as seamlessly as possible? We don't want bugs in any of these scenarios. The challenge with answering this question is that right now We have such flexibility in the space that it is very hard to answer exactly what this is going to look like. So it is some form of moving routes between ETH1 and ETH2. We will have an execution engine which allows ETH1 to run very similarly to how it does right now, and that will be very well tested for these kinds of purposes. But I think the challenge here is we're trying with these execution environments that allow us such flexibilities and so many possibilities. We're trying to not lock ourselves down just to committing to saying exactly this is how it's going to work right now, because that starts closing down the design space for us and could ultimately end up in a worse product. So the answer to that is yes, it will be tested. There will be some migration path. Exactly what that looks like, I can't specify right now, but that will definitely exist and is vital for the continuation of Ethereum 2.0.
And just to add on to that, like concretely, there's definitely an intention to essentially move ETH1 into the new ETH2 infrastructure in a way that you wouldn't have to migrate your dApp and it would just continue to run. Not quite seamlessly. There'll be some sort of metadata updates of like, oh, new network, new chain, that sort of thing. But in terms of like, you wouldn't have to like rewrite your dApp or like do these things. That being said, there will be an opt-in upgrade path to go to perhaps this new type of EVME that Carl was alluding to, which you'd get like a lot of, honestly, like great improvements on top of what we have today. So yeah, keep an eye out.
And I think a lot of this ties into what Greg's presentation was on earlier on how do we making connections and building common tooling between these frameworks. And it's very important to have these intermediate tools between the two chains.
It's totally, having an easy path for upgrades is definitely important and it'll be there. Something else worth considering too is that, you know, if you've just gone from like this pocket calculator to this like multi-core, like 1,000 times faster machine, perhaps a refactor is going to be important for a lot of the dApps. Like, not saying that like you're going to have to refactor, but you got a lot to do. Like, you got a whole new space to play in now. So, it might be a refactor might be what you end up choose doing because it'll be better for your customers. Or not customers, people that are using your thing, opting in without any control from you.
Here's that quickly, is one like quick answer. Where is this conversation happening? Where do you guys like, you know, interact with the dApp dev community so they can ask those questions online?
Hey, I can speak on behalf of that a little bit. Like, we're a little bit early still. You know, that's like phase two. And to be quite frank, like a lot of the confusion around this is because like some of the, as Carl explains it, like the design space is so open, but it makes it also super complicated. Like a lot of people have to like rethink the way this is. I mean, how long did it take most developers to actually understand the EVM? Like 2 years, like before people were like fully understood. So it's going to take some time to understand these new concepts. And once that happens, you'll see a lot better. I don't think it's immediate to fully discuss with them. I think the first priority is just talking with like tooling teams to understand how we can better help them and concurrently going with adapt developers.
Yeah, the Quilt team deserves a plug here too. They're building a simulator so that you can build EEs or test on top of EEs without needing all of the chain infrastructure. You can just start a process and start testing. So I think this is something that's going to really enable dApp developers to get involved because it's a bit low level at the moment, I think, for them. But it's opening up to them.
Hey, so we were at Interrupt 2 with Weblog, and we're very grateful. I think it was fun to work with all of you. We did a couple changes, so that's also an announcement for ChainSafe in particular. So we support Alpine, so we don't need to mess around. Alpine for Docker images. So it would be pretty easy for us to set up a testnet with your stuff. I think do you have a Docker image? Okay, cool. And Wade, do you have a Docker image as well? Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. So if we can help in any way, we're here to help, right? DEF is giving us like credits and funds for that. So please involve us and we'll be happy to help.
A couple of you, you know, probably know like some of the ETH1 core devs, but usually a lot of them are kind of like detached. So it's like if there were some things with ETH2 designs that you would want them to like try to look at, like maybe each of you, it's like what is it that you would really like them to look at? Because there's a lot of brain power there as well. Thanks.
Sync strategies.
So we're running out of time. So can we use this as like sort of a wrapping up thing as the what? Yeah.
Data serialization.
API standardization efforts.
Yep. Okay, this is not just a single line. So working on Trinity, we actually have a focus of both ETH1 and ETH2. So I actually feel like I've been exposed a lot to a lot of the ETH1 efforts and ongoings and things. And like really from what I've seen, like both groups of quote core devs are like starting to really just tackle the same questions. Like a big one that comes to mind is like state management and things. We obviously want to like, you know, we've seen what has happened on ETH1 in terms of the state growing and growing and growing. And we want to, you know, basically find a solution in ETH2 where like that's not going to be a problem. And yeah, like there's a lot of cool ideas around like stateless clients and things that, again, have application in both domains.
I think a good thing we can learn is what to and not do with in terms of governance. What we have right now within Ether 2.0 is the research team, I think, leads a lot of the decisions. And so there's sort of a central shilling point, which exists much less in Ethereum 1.0. And the idea is that the research team wants to have less and less of this role. But how can we do this in a manner that prevents deadlock and allows for continuous innovation? I think there are a lot of lessons to be learned from ETH 1.0 there.
I'd be willing to take anything. I'll take any advice from any of the people that have been building ETH1 or blockchains or people like Wei. Anything they've got, bring it here. Keen for it.
I think there's a lot of we can learn about light clients, how to create light clients from ETH1. And on the other hand, Ethereum 1 will greatly benefit from the fact that the E2 chain will be finalizing ETH1 as well. So it would be much easier to create efficient light clients for ETH1, but the incentivation schemes, the load balancing of the requests, these are areas where we can share the solutions. And kind of on that ground, I'm kind of excited about the possibility of ETH1 incorporating LibP2P support in some way. This is something that's possible in the future.
Okay, probably, I'd like to take advices with network reputation systems, connection managers, and sync strategy, and optimized incremental storage for the state. Yeah, that's it.
I'm actually mostly like related to both ETH1 and ETH2. I'm actually both care like a lot about the backward compatibility issue. Like the thing is for like currently, like probably all of you know that in ETH1 we have the a breaking change that creates a lot of conflict. I hope we can try to avoid the same situation on ETH2 by designing the execution engine better, like make it forward compatible from the beginning. I think that's something quite important. It's also really important to consider future changes of WebAssembly because there will be upgrades at a version list. That's how the web works. That will be how WebAssembly specification works. So how do we incorporate those new features adopted in WebAssembly into our WebAssembly execution engine in S2? I think that's also something that's quite important to consider.
Just quickly before Carl wraps this up, I just wanted to just announce that we're looking for a senior Rust developer. If you are a Rust developer and you want to work on F2, come talk to us. Thank you.
Cool. Well, thanks everyone for attending that. Thank you to all of the clients represented here. I'm really like excited to see the work that's going to happen. These incentivized test nets, this mainnet launch, which is like this incredible event. And then this time next year, I look forward to seeing all of you back here on stage. Hopefully we can talk about these experiences we've had all in good light. I think it's very exciting to see where this is going. Thank you.